some shitty that I don't record. It starts out with some language that there isn't complete agreement about. Some people use these as synonyms, some people don't. Here we go. Purpose of a sample is to represent a specific population. Focusing on this part. The better the sample represents the population, the more accurate will be the inferential statistics and the results of the inferential statistical tests. Influential cases are sample members with extreme or non-representative scores that influence the inferential stats. Let's imagine something truly dramatic. Remember the one about how many times have you had stitches? And so we've got a distribution that looks like this. It's got a mean of about 2.4. It's got a standard deviation of about 4. And obviously not. You can't go through life owing stitches. And then, if we were to take one more data point, say from your friendly neighborhood data analyst, I have it the day we collected those data, had stitches 82 times. What am I going to do to the mean and standard deviation? And should I? Let's say that we really were interested in a sample of, at the time, middle 40s stats professors. Still, do you think you want that 82 in there bouncing that mean and standard deviation around? That's what we mean by influential case. Now notice, the assumption of an influential case is, it's real. It's real. I was a middle-aged stats professor. I belong in that fucking population. How dare you take my score away? Because it's not about me, it's about the representation of the sample. Because the sample has a job. And the way David Owen Shaw used to say it, if an individual sample member isn't up to the representation, bye. Because what we really need is a population represented by a sample. Individuals are there and curry favor by their representativeness, not their mere existence. Outliers are cases with values that are too extreme to have come from the same population as the rest of the cases. Notice the assumption is that we don't have other information to decide if they belong there or not. This is the situation that we're in. I didn't tell you this story, but the story was we're collecting data from a bunch of eighth graders and a bunch of college kids who were ed majors were visiting schools that day. They happened to be in the room when we passed out the questionnaire, and some individual passed out the questionnaire and then collected it. I don't want them in that sample. But we didn't ask them anywhere on the questionnaire, are you a visiting college student? Strangely, I didn't think of that. It's not that strange. It's on there now. Are you a member of this class? What class? Bastards. Sometimes all that you have to decide whether a case belongs in that sample and represents the population is whether their score makes sense given the rest of the distribution. That's what outliers are. When all you've got is the extremity of their score as an indication that they don't belong there. Now, don't belong there has some different sources. They might be the wrong population. They might have been a dick and put down scores that don't represent them. It might have been a calculation error or a transcription error. One of those four has been in my life often enough that it always sort of bubbles to the top. We don't want influential cases when we're doing descriptive and inferential statistics and inferential tests because they change things from what they should be. If I want to notice this person, I want to say, yeah, and one of these loonies has had stitches 83 times. They were not used to calculate the mean and the standard deviation. And nobody's going to go, but their data. Sometimes all we have to identify influential cases is outliers. A score extreme enough that we say, maybe you belong here, maybe you don't, but I'm worried about you disrupting the data results that we get and adding to the failure to replicate. Because one of the arguments for the procedures we're about to talk about is that when you go back and you reanalyze, let's say right around 120 analyses from the same journal over a period of 4 years, and you get the raw data and you do an influential case analysis, it nearly doubles the replication index for that set of data sets. Oh shit. Leaving shit alone doesn't help. Getting data so that it is representative and comports, your best shot. And so here we have, how do outliers influence univariate tests? Outliers always increase the standard deviation. Start there. Outliers always lead to an overestimate of variability. If all the outliers are on one end, it pulls the mean that direction. If all the outliers are on the other end, it pulls the mean that direction. You might, magically, by the whim of some greater being than us, have perfectly symmetrical outliers that don't change the mean, but they will jack up the standard deviation. And obviously, if your outliers are on one end or the other, it's going to mess with your skewness. So outliers are boogering around with things that matter. The distribution, the representation, the ability to estimate means and standard deviations. Because everything we do comes down to starting with estimates of means and standard deviations. You can calculate an R without having original individual data. You can calculate an R with just the means and the standard deviations. Now, the preferred technique for outlier analysis, identification, and removal is to be able to identify participants who are not likely to be members of the population of interest. All those kids got a pen. All those visiting students got a pen from the junior high school. And for most of those people, that was the only writing implement they had with them. So they filled out the questionnaire with a pen. Whereas students, especially 17 years ago, routinely used pencils so they could erase. That was my tell. Sometimes you can figure something out. Other times you can't, and you're stuck with, well, I'll keep you if you're not going to fuck up my mean and standard deviation. Boy, doesn't that sound just, really? That's it? That's the sophisticated technique we're studying in a graduate class? Pretty far into the semester, too. That's what you got? That's what we got. We need to protect the shape of the distribution and the estimate of the mean and the standard deviation. These are not words statisticians use. They don't talk about protecting values. We do, because our data represents something that we care about and are trying to make better, or at least less awful. However, often the only indication we have that a participant doesn't come from the population of interest is that they have an outlying score. So we will operate under the assumption that outlying scores mean that a participant is probably not a member of the target population or that something bad happened to their score. And if included, the data as is would produce a biased estimate of the population value and resulting analyses. And there's our magic phrase, hypothesis blind. You pick a procedure, you apply the procedure, you analyze the data, you're done. You don't go fishing for different transformations or different outlier analyses to give you what you want. Probably the most common procedure out there is to identify outliers as any data point with a z-value greater than, pick your poison. 2, 2.5, or 3 are the most common. This means that some values that really do belong in the distribution were incorrectly identified as outliers. Well, we're used to fucking up like this all the time. We know that every time we reject a null, we've got a 5% chance of a type 1 error. This whole thing is a game of estimation and gambling. You got to pick what you're afraid of. Are you afraid of type 1 errors? Use an LSD. No, use an HSD. You're afraid of type 2 errors? Use an LSD. You're afraid of means that are in the wrong place? Pick an outlier. One problem with this approach is that outliers influence the standard deviation, making it larger than it should be, leading us to miss outliers. The idea is that some outliers will occasionally hide themselves. Now, let's be honest. You'll work for an hour or two to build a data set that's an example of this. It doesn't happen often, it doesn't happen much, and when it does happen, it doesn't hurt that bad. But it does bring up the idea that maybe we should be using a solution to a problem that doesn't have any tie to the problem itself. And that is to use rank order statistics to make all of our decisions based on the rank order of things rather than the value of things. And so, if I have these versus these, it's the same three cases. It's the three highest scores. And so if we operate by using rank order information, it cleans up a little bit. And so my favorite formula is Hoagland, Moss, Teller, and Tukey, 1983. This is the same Tukey that gave us LSD and HSD. This is the same Moss, Teller that gave us a lot of what is currently called exploratory data analysis. And Hoagland is a mathematical genius who, unfortunately, liked to start projects, assemble people, and usually take the last place in the authorship, even though he paid for it. And so the man has not gotten the attention he should have gotten. He created an awful lot of really good research programs and things. Always put his name on the end, but before this became popular. Nowadays, you often see the person who runs the center takes the last authorship. And in different research areas, you know that if you want to see what lab it came out of, don't look at the first couple of authors, because that's kids and youngins being turned loose. You look at the end to see who the old man, the old lady was that was running things. That was reasonably impolite. So what we're going to do is we're going to base an outlier analysis based on non-parametric statistics. So now that we found an outlier, this is the part where we really piss you off. That's not true. Make you wonder about me as a person. That's pretty good. What do we do with identified outliers? And there are two basic operations to do to them. Trimming and Windsorizing. Trimming. How should we represent this? Off with their heads. You trim a data by making it go away. Typically, by transforming it to a missing value. Gone. Why would you do that? Because you know that if you leave them in there, it's going to booger up your mean, your standard deviation, maybe your skewness, maybe your R's, F's, and T's. You've done an analysis, and they have a score that is too large or too small to be comfortable with the results on the estimation process of their inclusion. But the problem with trimming is it leads to a loss of data. More importantly, it leads to an underestimate of the standard deviation. Notice I didn't say it lowers the standard deviation. I said magic words. It leads to an underestimate. which means that people have done the simulations and the analyses of the real data. So they say, this causes a problem. Not it changes scores, but it fucks things up. Winds are rising. This is even weirder. Because this is like, throw somebody away? Yeah, they're not going to help us estimate this mean. That's not hard. They're not going to help us estimate this standard deviation. And they're not going to do a damn thing for us trying to figure out the shape of this distribution. But Windsorizing is to recode the data value to the nearest acceptable value. In other words, I've done my outlier analysis, and this is my outlier boundary. And so these three scores all get transformed to that. Oh my God! What's worse than throwing things away? Changing them! Sample only exists to serve our purposes of representing a population and fitting into the statistics we're about to wedge it into. Anything that helps that, we call good. Anything that doesn't help, we call bad. Oh my God, you're serious. You just changed the score? Oh yeah. The advantage of Windsorizing, and when I ask you which do you prefer, the uncleaned data, the trimmed data, or the Windsorized data, thou shalt say Windsorized. Thou shalt. Is because Windsorizing and trimming give virtually the same quality of mean estimate, virtually the same quality of skewness estimate, but Windsorizing gives you a better estimate of the standard deviation. The notion of trimming, this is, and you have to decide if this is more or less comforting. Trimming says, you're too big or too small, you don't belong here, bye. Windsorizing says, you belong here, and you probably are an extremely large or an extremely small score, but not that fucking large or small. So we want to keep you in as a large score, but not something crazy. And we're going to define what crazy is by our outlier boundary model. So now you know two things to do to try and clean up your data, both of which tend to have a positive impact on skewing. I mean, the whole reason you do a nonlinear transformation is to clean up skewing. One of the reasons to do an outlier analysis is if all your outliers are on one end, it cleans up the skewing. So we have two different things we know how to do. That means at some point we have to decide what order to do them. I have a suggestion. Remember, this whole damn thing is reactive. It's intentionally reactive. It's post hoc. You look at the data, the rule is a priori, but the application is post hoc. I look at it and I say, well, that's a skewed distribution. Let's see how skewed and figure out what we're going to do about it. Well, that might be an outlier. I think we should check. So it's reactive. So you look at the distribution, and if it's a continuous distribution with both skewing and outliers, versus is it a discontinuous distribution with skewing and outliers? Here, I would characterize this as we have outliers that are adding skewness. We have outliers that are adding skewness. Here we have skewness that lead to scores big enough they might be identified as outliers. So, my recommendation is, if you have this, correct your skewing first. If you have something that's skewed and it looks like a continuous skewed distribution, correct the skewing first, then check for outliers. If you've got a reasonable looking distribution and a blip, check for outliers. Windsorize them suckers, then go back and see what your skewness is like. And tell the whole story.